Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Monday to you as we draw to the end of the month of June. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold here, Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, the Ozone, John Osher, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, and I know this because, like a good lawyer, I would never ask a question on the air that I didn't know the answer to. That's a lie. But I could ask Ozone if he would be here if it weren't for the fact that Jaguars Today was on the air and he was a part of that program. But I know the answer to that. And I think, by the way, he's dressed more typically like I dress.
Yeah.
At work. How's good, the t-shirt?
Good God, are you serious?
Yes. I know, and that's really pathetic. You
I'm
look
go
like
I'm sitting in a corner.
Do you have flip flops on? What are you wearing on
I
your
don't,
feet
I
right
have
now?
I have a pair of bad stained Van boat shoes.
Wow. All right. Well, that fits with what you've got on. You've got some
my bad stained.
You've got a t-shirt from some bar on there. It looks like it's an Irish pub, and yeah, you look like
just rolled out.
You look like a Floridian on vacation.
Oh, good.
Is what you look like good. On staycation.
No, I wouldn't be here, but I think it speaks to my dedication to the show and Wild West Gold and Gun Monday.
Guns of Gold. Guns of Gold. He'll get it after a year and 14 months, we'll call it now. He'll get it eventually. Tony's glad you're here on time today as opposed to last week.
Yeah.
What happened with you last week?
Got I was caught behind a fire in a garbage truck in my neighborhood.
The garbage truck was
caught
on fire.
The back, somebody had thrown something in.
Something burning.
That was a blaze.
Yes.
And there were a couple fire trucks there, and they were putting it out.
No one was hurt, right? Everyone's good, as far as you could tell.
I was fine, which is that's big.
We can see you, so we're assuming you made it through unscathed.
But, in my neighborhood, there's really no side exits. It's one of these where there's one exit, and there was really only one service road out. And, there was fire.
You were stuck.
So
there's a fire.
Yeah. Fire's the great equalizer.
We were going down to Legoland yesterday for the annual pilgrimage to the high holy Mecca of plastic bricks. And we're going down I-4, and there was, it was one of those deals where you could see black smoke up ahead. All three lanes were shut down. This car...
It's always awesome on I-4 too, isn't it?
Oh yeah, right. Because usually very smooth flowing.
Always goes well.
Never an issue going on I-4.
Other than that, I-4 is always great.
We were actually past Orlando for the most part, or almost to Winter Haven, so it was pretty far down the line. But and they got the people out. The people were okay, but that car melted. It was on fire. The whole car was on fire, melted right to the rims. I mean, there was nothing left of it. It was an unbelievable sight. Just a black husk when it was all said and done. So that was my weekend.
Yeah, I think with the garbage truck, I think there was pretty high level of concern because you don't really know what's burning. When it's waste, who knows what's really burning? Is it explode? So they were very quick. I mean, it was a striking thing.
Toxic, noxious.
Well, yeah,
cloud.
I guess you don't really, you don't really know, and all of a sudden there's fuel involved in a truck, Mike.
Well, there is that.
Yeah,
I understand. So. Yeah, it could be a dangerous situation. We're glad everyone escaped okay.
Yeah, as far as I know.
As far as we know.
We didn't get an email from the homeowners.
It is pretty quiet around here, by the way. Johnny O wouldn't be the only one. The business offices, they're still selling tickets, Tony. But
right.
Other than that, I don't think they're getting a whole lot of business conducted.
This is as close to a road game, like game day feel as
game
we'll
day,
have in this
right?
building until we get to the regular season and everything gets rolling.
Does that mean Linda Fortunato's ordering pizza for us?
I don't think so. Today,
she's but welcome to stop by.
It was weird pulling into the parking lot. I'm like, all right, it does feel a lot like I'm coming here on a Sunday morning right now, but it is here for Jaguars Today on a Monday instead.
Yeah, we're going to get into a couple of things, a couple of manufactured late June NFL conversations for you as well as we can do them. And one of them today, we'll talk about the impact of Greg Olsen, good and bad, just when you have a new coordinator coming in, the new offensive assistant coming in. But it's just down the hall, Tony, talking to Johnny O in his palatial digs down there before I came in. And I got to get this off my chest. There are a couple of guys out there, and I'm sure there are a couple of ladies out there as well, but it's the guys that I get the reaction from more than anything. That everything, anything you say on social media or anything basically that is said publicly, you're about the team, they're just negative about it, right? And look, you have every right to be negative after a team wins only 9 games in 3 years. I get that sentiment, but it's almost to the point where for a handful of folks out there, John, it's they're looking for the dark cloud in sure. every situation, right? More so than they're even willing to give, like, hey, you know what? We signed Julius Thomas. Maybe this guy's going to come in and help us. They'd focus more on, well, come on, they didn't bring Peyton Manning with them, or they spent too much money on him, or this or that, or here's why he's not any good. He's still got this guy Blake Bortles throwing to him. You didn't improve there. What? It's always something. Do you get? Are there certain people like that you constantly get nothing but that from them in the ozone?
Yeah, there are, and, you know, in part, I don't mind that because you sort of know what you're getting, and you can sort of point out, you can have fun with it. You know, I don't know that they're having that much fun with it, but, you know, you can sort of poke fun at it a little bit in a good-natured way of, you know, this is sort of supposed to be fun in the end. And
sure.
You know,
it's entertainment.
It's NFL and it's entertainment. And, you know, for the people running the show, it's life
their,
and death
it's their
career,
job.
You know, and that's great as it should be for the fans and us talking about it. You know, if you're that over the top down on everything, you're probably going to get poked fun at a little bit in terms of just, you know, poking some holes in it. So I don't mind it. On a serious note, I get why people look at every move this team makes and expects the worst because things have been going bad for a long time. On the other hand, if you consider the starting point with Dave and Gus, which I think you have to for what they're doing, if you're going to judge moves being made and the progress right now, that's clearly the starting point. You know, I don't know that everything has been perfect since they took over. But I don't know, when you look at it, what they should have done differently up to this point in order to try to rebuild out of the hole they were in. I don't know that there's anything in terms of overall strategy that they should have done differently. Should they have signed every big-name free agent out there? We all know that that historically doesn't work. So I get the negative, but I don't really know, when you look at detail, 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 if there's many strong arguments for doing things dramatically different than what Dave and Gus have done. Sure, should have kept Daryl Smith. There's things like that.
Oh, yeah, like you can point to a
but
transaction.
But as an overarching approach, you know, it's we don't know if it's going to work because this is not scripted television. This is something where you have to go out and win on the field, and there's no guarantees in the NFL. That's what makes it fascinating to watch. But for the most part, I don't really know exactly what they should have done differently from a broad brush sense.
Yeah, well, and I think the people, and I'm not asking you to defend that point of view. That's your point of view, and I think a lot of reasonable people would say exactly what you said or something close to it. But I think the ones I'm talking about, the ones that no matter what it is, they find a way to spin it to the point where they're almost, if not expecting the negative to come, almost hoping for the negative to
there's
come
that.
To kind of prove their point that it's all in a downward spiral. Those people would say you're just either a company man or you're totally blind to what's been going on in the field because, you know, you look at situations around the National Football League where teams have turned it around a lot quicker in the win-loss column, and you could talk about going from X amount of wins, you know, 2 wins when they took over. That's what they had. Well, they went to 4, but then they went backwards to 3. And their point of view is that some of these people out there, and maybe, you know, I'm getting just wrapped up in the point of view of a handful of people, but I find
well,
it hard to believe that someone could be constantly down on every single thing they've done in the last 3 years.
Well, there, not everything is always negative, first of all, but I don't consider those fans or those readers or those listeners dramatically different than if you go on any comment section on any media website, there are going to be a stream of, or a thread of commenters where every story is commented negatively on. There, with the internet, with fandom, with fan feedback the way it is in this day and age, there's going to be that 10% that is going to be against everything. So I really consider that reader, that strand, in that same vein. If it was politics, if it was music, if it was whatever, you're going to get that a small percentage of people who don't like anything about it.
There's a percentage, there's a percentage that likes everything. And that those people, I'm not saying, I would tend to agree with that. I would side with that side more because I think there are more positives than negatives that I've seen being around the organization, particularly in the last year plus that Tony and I are here in the building every day and seeing what's going on behind the scenes. But at the same time, those people could be just as disillusioned, right, by what's going on out there. But
if you're happy, are you illusioned? Is that
you could be?
Yeah.
So, I mean, or maybe not disillusioned. Disillusion might be right. I don't know. I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for. But they're not as realistic probably as they need to be.
Sure.
I say need to be. Who says you need to be anything? The it's people who are negative don't need to be anything. Yeah. It just honestly baffles me that some people that identify themselves as a fan of a team can be, to my eyes, and I'm not saying that they literally have never said anything positive, but I can't remember a single thing in interacting with a certain handful of people that they look at and say, wow, you know what, that may be an actually good move that the organization's made.
I can't prove this because I haven't done it, but I'm assuming that if there is a comment section on Seahawks.com, that there is a thread of unhappy fans, and my guess is there are on the Patriots too.
But yeah. I would guess they are not. They may be unhappy that they decided to throw the ball instead of run it right at the last play of the Super Bowl.
I bet they find more than that.
Maybe they're not happy.
That thread on the Seattle Seahawks page is going to be the guys that are going to be going on there saying, see, I told you Carroll would blow up in the big situation. I told you, I've been telling you for 5 years, he can't handle that situation in a football game. And they're never going to let that go. It doesn't matter that they won the Super Bowl last year.
But it doesn't strike me that fans of the Seattle Seahawks in any circumstance could be 100% negative about their team. How could you be? I find it truly hard to believe unless someone's just being a troll on the internet, which there are plenty of those out there.
When I was with the Colts, I got comments, and the Indianapolis Star did more comments than we did at Colts.com. But there were questions sent to the beat writer every year that they needed to get rid of Peyton Manning before this team was going to take the next step.
Well, all right, but, you know, there are always crazy people out there.
That's right.
But does that mean that they thought they should get rid of Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne or Edger and Jen? You know what I mean? I mean, the ones I'm talking about don't think there's a person on this team that's worth a damn. And there never will be as long as Dave Caldwell selecting those and as long as Gus Bradley, who's in way over his head, according to those people, is coaching them and selecting the assistant coaches, because that means they're all going to be tainted by, you know, the mark of Bradley's incompetence, according to this group.
And I think Gus and Dave would say, as long as this team's 3-13, then those people have the right to say that.
Oh, I'm not saying they don't have the right to say that. I have the right to question whether or not they're actual fans of the team or they're more people that are just happier, mired in misery.
Probably a little bit of both. I'm sure realistically there's some who've been beaten down by it. I mean, it's been a long time since you went to a game in November and felt like this team had a chance to do something within that individual season. That's been what? You know, 2010.
Sure, I got you.
Now, I don't know the history of these callers. Were they saying the same thing in 07, 08, 09? I have no idea.
We go to Tony for that. He archives every caller and social media response we've had.
I just think, you know, when I got to this job in 2010, 2011, it was my first experience really dealing with fans on a day-to-day basis where you're getting emails and you're dealing with the reaction. And I learned pretty quickly there are some people who are going to be very, very negative about any situation, and there's really not that much you can do about it. And I believe that if this team was 12-4, you would have unhappy fans just the same.
All right. I will not block them on Twitter just because they're negative. I just that will be a reminder to me that life is beautiful, and there are things to be found in beautiful in every aspect of something. That's crazy. All right, it's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday today.
That was really nice.
Thank you very much. It made no sense, really. Today, our question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is, with a new offensive coordinator, hence a new offensive system coming in, what does that do to your expectations? It's something we'll discuss today. Have we talked about that enough, the impact on a young group of offensive players having to learn a new system? In many of their cases, year two, some of them in year one, from what they expect, not a new system to them, but coming out of college, you've always got that transition to make. So are we underplaying the impact, positive or negative, that Greg Olsen can have and coming in here as the offense coordinator, changing the system from what the Jags did last year, albeit didn't do very successfully. So maybe you're thinking it's just a natural increase, but you can share your thoughts with us on that on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. The number is always 641-1010, and that doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. So send your thoughts on that. We'll get into that as we go along today. Also look at the ESPY categories impacting the National Football League as we race through the end of June here. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Johnny O, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day asks you whether or not your expectations for the Jags offense have increased or whether they're dampened by the fact that they've got to learn a new offense. Now, you know, you look on paper and say, that offense is pretty damn bad. Anything has got to be an upgrade, right? Well, that's kind of what we thought as an overall sense with the team, right? The year before, they were historically bad, at least for the first half of the season, managed to win four games. Got to be better last year. Well, record-wise, it wasn't,
right?
So, I mean, ultimately, that's the arbiter that gets you hired and fired if you're a head coach in the National Football League. But there is certainly, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that any change that makes Blake Bortles more comfortable in what he does is going to make this offense more proficient in 2015. The question is, will he be more comfortable? I was reading your cohort, J.P. Shadrick's Shadrick Sighting piece with Mark Brunell on Jaguars.com.
Oh, so you were the one.
I was. I like to give J.P. page views.
Okay.
We have that reciprocal agreement. If he ever gets a ratings book, he said he would write down Tony's name,
okay,
and hopefully
good.
I'd get some of the credit. Anyhow, Mark Brunell said basically it always took him a year whenever he was adjusting to really get that down. Now, you can look at various points in the Jags' history where they changed offensive coordinators and Mark Brunell still succeeded, but he had become a veteran by that point in time and had a lot of veterans surrounding him, John. Are we overlooking the fact that you've got all these young guys that were here last year and their head's swimming, and this is supposed to be the year they finally, you know, get a chance to breathe a little bit and slow things down. And now, instead of trying to just instinctively do what you were coached to do the first time around, you got to learn a whole new thing, everything from the quarterback right on down to the last guy on offense.
Well, I think we overlooked it a bit, and then at the end of OTAs, I forget what day it was, but Gus in the press conference talked about that very thing, that you hope that a lot of those, and I'm paraphrasing it, but that the rough draft takes place in training camp and in the preseason. And they want to get those things done and that learning curve and the mistakes made and learning from it. You want to get as much out of the way as possible before you go into the regular season. And when he said that, that sort of made me think exactly what you just said. Yeah, I probably overlooked this a little bit. It's going to be a learning curve. At the same time, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that the offense could be better than what it was last year, even early under Olsen, but not close to what fans expect and what it's going to be as time goes on. It was bad last year, and if Blake is more comfortable and the offensive line is better and the running game is a little better, it's got a chance to be better than what was pretty bad last year, before it gets going to what they really want it to be.
The quarterback, we all beat each other up to be the first to say the quarterback is the most important position. We all know that, and as the quarterback goes, often goes the offensive side of the football. But the offensive line, just the sense you get from the additions that they made going from where they were last year, it has to be better this year. And if the offense, if the protection and the run blocking is better, no matter what you're running, mm-hmm. you've got to figure you're not going to have as many plays that just get blown up right at the line of scrimmage.
Well, you know, you have 71 sacks. And if you can reduce those a little and have all the rookies and young players last year, you had six or seven guys who had very little experience. Well, if each of those guys made two mistakes, well, then you've got 14 mistakes out of 65 plays. Percentage-wise, at least one of those probably happens every series. If the mistake causes a loss, you're looking at a down and distance situation in every series. Wow, all of a sudden you're up against it. So all of those that you cut out puts you in better situations. You would think, even in a new offense, the experience with these guys you would think would minimize or at least reduce those mistakes. So, yes, on that front, it's the experience that you hope they would be a little better. Although, again, I don't think they're going to be where they would want to be until, you know, a few weeks in or even longer, because this is going to take some time to develop. And that's not to say that they need to be horrible just because it's new.
Right. And you talk about the learning curve, and that's where the warning bells start going off in my own head, and I'm sure a lot of fans' heads too, considering, look, when the schedule came out, we talked about how important it was for this team, those two home games, to start off right off the bat, to at least win one of them, but probably 2-0 if they're going to get anything done in the 2015 season. And now you're talking about a new offense where are they really going to be comfortable and ready to be a team that can go 2-0 at home against Carolina and Miami early on in the season. And I think it is crucial for this team to start on the right foot, which is not something they've done in the last 7 or 8 years. And they have an opportunity with those back-to-back home games to do that. But those warning bells start ringing when it's talking about, hey, we got a new offense. We'll have to see how they gel into it. Rough draft in the preseason. In my own head, I'm going, ugh, no.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've hit on a pretty big storyline, because it's going to be, there's no reason, you know, it's not to say they can't be good offensively early, but it's going to be tricky, and there's no doubt that it's a new offense. So that will be something everybody's watching. I don't know how it'll turn out, but it's not, I don't think it's necessarily a given that they're going to be operating on all cylinders in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, well, and you look at the first 2 weeks, even though Carolina had a losing record last year,
yeah,
that defense is for real. The defense is very good, and Miami just added Ndamukong Suh to what was already a pretty decent side of the football over there.
Now, on paper, you know, there's a school of thought that you wouldn't have minded having those New England and that first four flipped and have New England and Indianapolis first, where if you get one of those, hey, you surprise people. And then you got things going, and then you've got the two that you feel like you're feeling good about in weeks 3 or 4. That's not the way it happened.
Puts more pressure on you to be ready right coming out of the gate.
But if that had happened, then we'd all be talking about, oh, they should have had Carolina and those in Miami first because they had a better chance to win those. So anytime you start looking at the schedule that way, you can always look at both sides of an argument.
Yeah, you look at the sack total, 71, such an ugly number in that regard. Everything is relative. You know, I heard Dan and Jeff on the drill this morning saying, boy, wouldn't you love to see that cut in half? And you think, wow, that would be extremely dramatic. 35 sacks allowed, which would put him right around the middle of the league, right? Kind of decent company in that range. I remember reading a story maybe a month ago in the New Orleans paper about Drew Brees and how the Saints were like, wow, Drew Brees got sacked 30 times. That number is way too large. And if they're going to make any kind of improvement this year, they've got to cut that number down significantly. And you're like, wait a minute. 30 is way too many. Yeah. I mean, you're never going to get to the range. I mean, and yet Drew Brees throwing for, you know, 4,900 yards and everything. And overall, they didn't have a good season.
It's also like sacks the other way. You know, 30, the number is important, but it's also important, are you getting 30 sacks, and are you throwing the ball away 50 times to avoid sacks? Which, you know, when I was in Indianapolis, that offensive line at the end, after about 07 was not a great offensive line. It was saved because Peyton Manning and that offense was very good at getting rid of the ball, at avoiding sacks. But the offensive line was struggling, and it was hurting the offense because it wasn't protecting as well as it had previously. So the number is important. It's also important, are you giving your quarterback real time to throw, or is he having to get rid of the ball?
Certainly that's a consideration. But,
but 71's not. I mean,
the bottom line, yeah. if he's getting sacked 71 times, chances are he's getting hit a lot more than that on top of that, right? And,
yeah.
And you know, sometimes you have a situation like with the Jags pass rush last year where they got home on the amount of times they got pressure right. on quarterbacks, they got an abnormally high amount of sacks. But even if you are giving up only sacks when you're getting pressured and you're not giving up too many other quarterback hits, it's still too many for the sheer fact that your guy's going to get killed back there.
Well, yeah, and every sack is a horrible down and distance situation, so hard to overcome, and it just tilts the game in the wrong direction. But yes, you don't want a young quarterback, even one as big and strong and, you know, physically imposing as Blake is, you don't want him getting hit that many times in a season.
I just go back to the stories in the early part of Jason Campbell's career, who, by the way, didn't he just announce his retirement officially in the last couple weeks?
Yeah.
Jason Campbell, really going back to Auburn, he had a different offense coordinator every year he was in college. That's an extreme. But then the same thing happened to him in the NFL for about the first four or five seasons. He
Alex truly, Smith the same way, right?
Truly, was he that?
Alex Smith was a long time with the 49ers where he had a different coordinator.
Every single year.
Well, and there's no doubt that Gus wrestled with that. And, you know, what's better? If you feel like the coordinator, that you're not communicating and it's not working between you and the coordinator and the coordinator in the offense, do you keep that just for continuity's sake? That's a tough one, because if you don't like what's going on, so I think it was so ineffective at times last year that even with the change, step one, square one for the new offense has a chance to be better than a square two or a year two of the old offense and then build from there. So
you shouldn't stick with something that you think is not feasible
right.
long-term. I get that.
Gus did not, I know he wrestled with this after last season. This was not a case of change for change's sake. He believed that philosophically this needed to be done. And it wasn't ideal. You guys know Gus. He's not the kind to arbitrarily fire somebody. But he felt like this needed to be done in terms of the direction. So you would think that, again, square one here would be beyond what year two was for the old offense, and then you're building from there. That's the hope.
Right, but the issue, I think, the greater issue is, and it doesn't help you win games if you pay attention to this kind of stuff, but the patience that Jaguar fans have shown, I think, over the last few years, to the degree where ticket sales right now, Tony, we talked to Mark Lamping a few weeks ago, outpacing expectations at or better than they were at this point last year. They expect to have more season ticket sales. The win-loss record has not hurt the overall level of enthusiasm, right? It has it. And for individual
cases.
Yeah,
I think it would be higher. I think we're forgetting what some winning can really cause a fever. You don't feel the fever that you would feel if they were winning.
Granted, but you haven't had a drop. You haven't had it's at least maintained.
It's been remarkable.
Right.
There's no question.
It's at least maintained. And here you are in a situation where, okay, big picture, guys, let's get rid of this guy that we know we can't grow with. Let's get the guy in place now, early on. It's the second year. Maybe there's going to be a learning curve, but that's the problem. Here's this learning curve. And there's a segment of the fan base, and I don't think they're crazy to bring this up, and say we've been told to be patient. And how many years? Is this now? Are we now
all of a sudden making
and setting up a four-year plan, which most new regimes coming into the National Football League can't get up on a podium and sell a four-year plan to the fan base. And I understand the circumstances that this regime came in under.
Right, and again, I don't know what Shad's number is or if he has a number. I would tell you that if this team shows improvement offensively, defensively, takes a step, I don't see Shad in a hurry to make a change if if he continues to see what he considers progress.
All right, when we come back, we'll take your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. Pete Prisco put out a story with the guy who is the most overrated on each team in the National Football League that came out at the end of last week.
We'll of course he did.
We'll take a peek. Well, for Pete, that's 90% of the league, right. I believe, except for guys who are married to the pocket
right.
as quarterbacks.
I wonder who it'll be in Seattle.
Well, you don't really have to wonder, do you? We talked to Pete about him a little while ago, but we'll save a little suspense for that when we come back. We'll get into that. Your thoughts, welcome, certainly, on the impact of Greg Olsen coming in. Just as a general theme with a new coordinator and new offense coming in with this batch of young players facing the Jaguars, what kind of learning curve does that mean for these guys? And are we underselling the impact? Are you more or less inclined to believe this Jags offense is headed in the right direction? Does it increase or dampen your enthusiasm for 2015 when you realize that there is a learning curve that's going to be associated with all these players on the offensive side of the football? Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. We'll also take a look a little bit later on the at the ESPY nominations impacting the National Football League, at least in those certain categories. That's coming up as we continue. Jaguars Today, we're live at EverBank on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oja, you're not a TV junkie like Tony and I are.
Not a junkie.
You have any good series? What are you watching right now?
I actually just went sort of, cut the cord on cable a little bit. So I've got Netflix. I'm watching this show on FX called Legit with Jim Jeffries, who I love.
Is it good?
It's okay. It's not. I wouldn't put it up there with Louis on FX is really good. The Louis C.K. series. I wouldn't put it up there with that, but it's pretty good.
Tony acts like he has a life now. He comes in and he hasn't watched all my shows up to the moment.
I don't have HBO, so I'm not watching True Detective.
I don't have HBO, John, either.
I know you don't. I've told you.
Tony, HBO to go.
I won't go pirate.
HBO to go.
I'm getting that. We're taking the tact of getting it every few months and binge watching and then...
It's not bad, right?
They do that because they give you like the free month trial.
You get a free month trial.
Yeah, but I'm not doing it until after the season's over so I can get the free month and watch the whole thing.
You watched the first season of True Detective.
Yeah.
How did you watch that?
I watched it afterwards, binge watching during binge week on demand.
That's a good strategy.
That's a good excuse anyway. I just need somebody to tell me.
That's how I watched House of Lies.
I wasn't part of it when it was happening. Like everybody was having this conversation about True Detective. I was like, that sounds like fun.
Oh, first season was so good.
But I wasn't part of that. I watched it all at the same time.
I don't know what to think about the second season after two episodes, but I need to know, was what I saw at the end of the episode last night real or not?
Mm.
Or is it going to be through the miracle of TV that it wasn't as it appeared to be on the screen last night? Put it this way, when you take a couple of shotgun blasts to the torso, usually that means you're dead, right?
At least close to it.
Usually that means you're dead or clinging to life, as the case may be. I just throwing that
How
out.
Is the cast on that show? It looks terrific.
It's good.
Are they good? I mean, is it
brooding. If you like your dramas dark and brooding and...
Well, I saw the first season. The first season was terrific.
First season was outstanding,
yeah.
But it was a different. It's not following the same kind of style. Obviously, it's not like a kind of like a flashback deal. It's happening right now, but everybody is just such a broken person in this series.
I'd fit right in.
Yeah, you would. You'd fit right in. I like it. I mean, I like my dark and brooding. I can handle that. I just got to know if. It, in fact, was what I really thought it was last night. I'm watching. I'm like, wait a minute. It's late. Did that just really happen? Huh. All right.
Tweet Mike and leave me out of it.
Yeah, tweet me. Leave Tony out of it. And he will try to ignore until he gets his binge watch on a couple months from now.
I haven't heard
fine.
Anything yet. I've avoided it to this point.
I've done, and I haven't spoiled it for you.
Nope.
I mean, I did just say two to the torso, but, that could be anybody as far as you know. All right, 641-1010. Let's get a phone call or two in, and then we'll get into some of the most overrated, according to one Pete Prisco, players in the National Football League. And Pete has his guys he likes to get after. There's no question about that. Let's go to Terrence up first today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, Mike, fellas. How y'all doing?
We're good.
Mike,
what's up, man?
What's good? What's going on? Hey, Mike. I'm not dampened or hurt about the move. I am nervous about it though. I don't know if they must have had high expectations for this offense, because everybody knew that you had basically seven rookies starting on that offense, and to change it, to make them learn a whole new offense the second year around, that's just risky to me. Why are you going to put everybody in and I think you would have came out better going into the second year. Everybody thought the offense looked bad, but going into the second year with Jazz offense, where they could tweak it, learn it a lot better, you know, learn it even better for the next year. And I think you'll end up coming out on the better end versus trying to learn a whole new offense. You know what I mean?
I got you, Terrence. That's why we're asking folks about this today. And to me, doing the post-game show last year, you know, you get the immediate feedback from people. And I get it, man. The losses pile up. You're not happy. Totally understandable. I truly get that. And it got more and more difficult to not try to speak for JP, but I think you would agree. We sit there and try to point out there are reasons why they're going to struggle, logical reasons, just like Terrence said. To point to all the rookies, to point to this, to point to the newness of this, to point to the inability of the offensive line to protect, to all these things. But after a while, people are like, enough. I don't want to hear that anymore. Just give me some results on the field. Mm-hmm. So for Terrence to say that, I think he's in a dwindling number of people that take that, and maybe it's easier to do in the offseason when you're not right in the midst of it, that are able to take that kind of patient, long view with what was going on last year.
Yeah, and Gus said it at the end of last season, and when something like this gets said, it doesn't get heard all the time. It wasn't as much scheme with Jed as they couldn't get on the same page in terms of what plays, what approach, what parts of the offense, I guess the best way to put it, that he wanted to give to Blake in the offense. And it's been 6-7 months since he was specifically discussing this, but that was sort of the gist. It was not as much a dislike of Jed or the scheme or his thoughts, but it was needing to get in tune with a person who would run it philosophically the way they wanted it run. And I think some of that is going to be a focus on the run game, but more on, look, we're going to give the players a specific and consistent plays and approach rather than sort of being all over the place and being tricky and being, I don't say gimmicky, that's not what I'm looking for, but being consistent in what they run and having the players completely understand what the offensive approach
having
is.
Having a philosophy and perfecting and something that you do over and over again very well, right?
Yes, instead much of, better put than I did.
Instead of trying to dabble
radio
in so
guy.
Many different
Good job.
Things. Oh, yeah, sure.
But yes, and that's much more, rather than the scheme or the philosophy, it was more that. And a big part of it, we're all talking about Greg Olsen. They're also very comfortable and very confident in what Doug Marrone's going to bring to this as sort of, you know, I don't want to say it's an equal importance, but sort of 1A and 1B, there's a lot of confidence that that element is going to very much help the change be effective more quickly and more solid. That the offensive line being better on that front is going to help the transition from one offense to the other.
All right, 641-1010, the number. If you'd like to weigh in on that, you're certainly welcome to via the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line or on the phone lines. Just to touch on this Pete Prisco story, it was actually a few days old, came out at the end of last week, but Tony and I didn't get to this at the end of last week. And Pete goes around the National Football League and lists one guy on each team who he thinks is the most overrated.
As Pete will do.
Have you read the story?
I've not.
Okay. To be overrated...
Not this year anyway. I've read it a lot.
Right. understood. To be overrated means you have to be rated highly.
Correct.
In somebody's eyes, right?
I'm fascinated to see what he's going to say about Pittsburgh now that Polamalu's retired.
Well, that, I was with him on Polamalu,
well,
by
at,
the way.
At the end, yes.
Throughout. Anyway, who do you think would be the most overrated player on the Jacksonville Jaguars?
What would he say?
Have you seen it, Tony?
No.
Who do you guess as well, if you have a guess? Heath Miller, by the way, for Pittsburgh.
Got to be rated.
Right, yet it had to be rated by some measure.
And the, there's not a whole lot of options.
I'll give you a clue. The measure that
is
I think
saying
he
Mercedes?
Uses, he's not saying Mercedes. Okay, the measure he's using is money. Okay.
Okay.
And therefore, he ended up going with Zane Beatles.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Based on the contract. I think if you had said this last year and said, and he may have in fact said this last year in this very story, but if you had said he just got this money, I don't think this guy's going to play up to it. And I think Pete did, in fact say that last year. But now,
yeah.
At this point, I look at Zane Beatles and I say, well, who's rating him so highly
in
that he's
Pete's
overrated?
In Pete's defense on that one, if you go, very few people nationally rate many of the players on this team very high. So
you got to find something.
It's a little difficult to find a person who would be overrated. I'm sure Pete probably considered Paz as well, because Pete's not a big Paz guy in terms. He likes guys who are very, very good against the pass, middle linebacker. He possibly would have gone in that direction. I don't want to speak for Pete, but Beatles. If you consider money as an element to be rated highly, then that makes sense.
In the division, in the AFC South, the other guys that Pete singled out for Houston, he went with Brian Cushing. Said injuries have slowed him a bunch in his career, but he's a year removed from a major injury, so he might be better this season. He wasn't close to being the same player last year. Before he had his knee injuries, he did have 3 minor cleanup procedures this year already, but nothing major. It's tough for me. Brian Cushing is an interesting guy because he's been caught doing PEDs, been suspended for that, but when he's been healthy and on the field, he's played at an extremely high level. But he has been injury prone. So is he overrated, or are injuries just catching up to him? I don't think anybody expects him to be the guy he was before he ever started getting hurt.
Right. And some of these always depend on what you consider rated. If you think of Brian Cushing as the player that he was very briefly, which was very, very, very good and very available for a while, because of his lack of availability and injuries, then he probably is overrated compared to what his potential could be.
He went with Andy Levitre, the guard for the Tennessee Titans, saying that when he signed the deal, he thought he'd be a perfect addition to the line. At one point, he was underrated, but he hasn't come close to living up to the deal. I'll take his word on that, but I've heard others say that as well. I don't, break down offensive line tape. And then with the Colts, he went with Frank Gore. He said, and Pete hates his old running backs too, but he said he's had a nice career, but the Colts are expecting a lot, or asking a lot, to expect a 32-year-old running back to have a huge season. The concerning thing is his yards per rush numbers going down from 4.7 2 years ago. He averaged 4.1 in 2003, and 4.3 last year. I would argue, though, you're playing in an offense where Colin Kaepernick has been regressing.
Right.
And where's the threat of stacking 7-8 men in the box on every play if you're a defensive coordinator?
The worry
Frank Gore will see less guys in the box than any running back in the league this year.
The worry for Gore and the worry with any running back is, do the Colts run in the same way that the 49ers ran, which with the 49ers, this was a team that believed and backed it up, that they were going to run the ball, they were going to be hard-nosed.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. This date in football history, we'll start with a sad note. 1983, 32 years ago, remember Joe Delaney, Kansas City Chiefs running back? It was getting close to the holiday weekend, certainly summertime. And there were 3 boys in a lake, I believe it was, and they were drowning. Delaney couldn't swim, but he also knew he couldn't leave 3 kids in the lake to drown. And he jumped in somehow managed to save one of the kids. I don't know, you know, the particulars. Was he in shallow enough water that Delaney could lift him up to safety? But in attempting to save the other two, the other boys lost their lives. Delaney drowned on that date. He was 24 years old.
And on his way to being a really good player.
His first year as a rookie had 1,121 yards with the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. So a very solid, young running back. And maybe even remembered more fondly for the sacrifice that he made. And as well, he should be for remembered for the sacrifice, but maybe even thought of as a better player, you know, because you become kind of legendary the way you choose to give your life for others. So he passed away on this date in 1983. 1949, happy birthday, Dan Dierdorf, born on this date, a one-time Monday Night Football broadcaster. Also in 1964, Pepper Johnson, NFL linebacker with the Giants. Is he in the Hall of Fame, Tony? I don't think he is in the Hall of Fame,
so,
right?
No.
You had Carthon, you had who else? Harry Carson, I'm thinking, along with LT.
Yep.
Pepper Johnson did not make the Hall of Fame, to my knowledge at this point. And Tony, for you, from the other football, 1950 on this date, the United States beat England 1-0 in World Cup soccer. How long would they go for their next win in the World Cup?
It would be a while.
It would be a while.
Good. Probably.
Good answer.
Let's see.
1950 to...
1950 to probably in the 90s.
1994, yeah. 11 World Cups later, they picked up a victory or two. Wasn't that when they beat Colombia in 1994?
I think it was, while the Colombian players had their families kidnapped.
I believe the Colombian goalkeeper got murdered.
Yeah.
Right? Because
when No, it wasn't the goalkeeper. It was one of their forwards.
Was it one of their forwards?
Yeah,
got murdered. Couldn't be further away from a goalkeeper.
When he got home. Because they lost that game. But they're like, when they left the hotel that morning to go play that game against the USA here in the States, they actually had been told that the cartels basically had kidnapped their families. Like, that's what they went onto the field knowing, playing that game that day.
Unbelievable. That is this date in football and football history, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing here. This date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
It's time for some punter talk here on the Honda Drive, because we got, well, a punter talking in the National Football League. New York Giants punter Steve Weatherford went on with Boomer and Carton on Friday afternoon and had the following to say about the division rival Philadelphia Eagles quarterback situation. Quote, "I'm going to give you a Ferrari," meaning Sam Bradford, "that maybe won't be running all the time, or I'm giving you a nice Cadillac sedan," meaning Sanchez. "It's not the fastest, but you know what you're going to get out of it. Bradford can go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, but you don't know if he's going to start up some days." He said, "I'm the biggest Tim Tebow fan in the world. I mean, who wouldn't want their daughter to date that guy? I'll tell you what, I don't want him taking snaps for my team. I'm sure Tom Coughlin is thrilled that his punter is stirring the pot." Seattle Seahawks defensive end Michael Bennett told a Honolulu TV station on Saturday that he may be willing to hold out for part of training camp because he's still unhappy with the deal he signed last offseason and no renegotiations are going on right now. Bennett, who lives in Hawaii in the offseason, poor guy, told the station, quote, "I don't mind staying home for a little while. Hawaii's weather is great, so I'll just keep it at that." And St. Louis Rams first-round draft pick Todd Gurley is expected to have a visit with Dr. James Andrews sometime in the next couple of weeks to check out that surgically repaired knee. Gurley said last week that he thinks he will be able to participate in training camp and the preseason. His upcoming visit with the doc could potentially clear the path for exactly that.
Yeah, players hold out. They're within their contractual rights under the CBA to hold out because there is a prescribed method of punishing them, yep, or so to speak, if you will. You know, it's not like a breach of contract, like you take them to court. Here's what you're allowed to fine them. So it's covered under that. So that's Bennett's prerogative. I do have an issue with people who say, for instance, Justin Houston is holding out. Well, he hasn't signed his franchise tender. He's not under contract. He's right, withholding his services, but in the same sense that I'm withholding my services to anyone who I don't work for, right? And so I don't like it being deemed a holdout if you're not under contract. But Bennett is the worst example of a guy who, even maybe, though he may be deserving of it, Pro Football Focus, I think, named him as one of the, I think it was them, named him as one of the 10 most deserving, or guys who outplayed the contract by the largest financial margin based on their grading system. But still, when you sign a deal 1 year,
yeah,
and you want to renegotiate it the very next year, you're not going to find any sympathy from the fan base on that one.
No, and, you know, I think deep down, you know, who knows if he really thinks this will work. You're making your point. You're hoping you have one more good year and you've made your point, and maybe the team will do something next year. But it's tough because once you get your contract that early in this system, it's very tough for teams to go back and renegotiate it because they've budgeted their salary cap at different positions. So the team, at that point, it's tough for them to set a precedent by renegotiating that, because then all of a sudden the entire structure of their books gets very, very tough to manage the more you do it.
Yeah, Steve Weatherford, you seen how jacked up he is these days? I mean, what kind of shape Steve Weatherford's in, the punter?
Yeah, my Punter Body magazine didn't come.
Didn't come. So. Dude, let me tell you, I'm not kidding.
He's like a model on the side.
He truly is like he looks like a triathlete or something. I mean, he's really in incredible shape. I get to New York the other day and I get in a cab at the airport and
Weatherford's driving.
But he's on. You know, they all those that little TV on that they loop like 5 minutes of promotional material for different stuff, advertisements and what have you. And one of the first things that comes up is Steve Weatherford on, what is it called? Like Stoop Talk or something like that, right? You know, the stoop of a brownstone building. They call it the stoop, the little steps that just kind of like concrete steps. And he's sitting out there, and that's kind of the gist of the show is they interview people sitting on the stoop. And so here he is on Stoop Talk. Talking about I don't know what, because I don't have the volume turned up in the cab, but I just thought it was interesting that Weatherford has gone from, you know, the obscurity of NFL punterdom to now he is somewhat of a media darling in the nation's media capital, right? The media capital of the world in New York City. So it's kind of interesting, I guess, what eating your Wheaties can do for you and running your mouth a little bit, too. And which he has every right to do. I mean, look, if you want to say it, I think a lot of people agree with what he said about Sam Bradford. Mm-hmm. Most guys just don't want to put it out there. And like Tony said, I wonder what Coughlin thinks about it. Most coaches don't want you giving the other team bulletin board material. You think that's accurate?
What year is Weatherford in?
He's been around for a while. He's 30-something. Right?
You know, he may be to the point where if the media end of it is taking off, where that's more valuable to him to create himself as an entity and a brand, you know, again, I can't speak for him, but that would make sense if he believes that this line of work is where his future lies, then that may be where his head's at.
What do you think of veteran? Do you know how many years Weatherford's been in the league, Tony?
He's 32 years old.
So probably 10-ish years, right? Guy like that's got to be
going
making
into his 10th year.
I don't know what his contract calls for. He's probably making at least $1 million, you would think, right? How many years would it take him, even if he has a little budding media career on Stoop Talk or whatever? It would seem to me it would take you a few years it's not like he's going to, I would think.
I don't know. Tony makes pretty good coin from Jaguars today.
But Tony's been grinding for a while now. Tony's a known commodity here in the city of Jacksonville.
Yeah. He's making $2.175 million this year. Oh, so $2.325 million
Well,
just call it $2 million.
Here's the thing, too. I don't think
he's not jeopardizing that.
His performance on the field is going to determine whether he's making that money. And I don't think Tom's going to cut him for making one comment about Tim Tebow.
No, I don't think so either. Chris Cluey, feels like he was kind of blackballed a little bit by the Minnesota Vikings because he was such an outspoken advocate for gay rights and other, what some would call controversial subject matter. And I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know if, you know, he just had declining skills. I'm not inclined to like study his career graph that closely, but he feels that way. And
it's probably a situation where if all things are equal, that plays into it. If you're performing at a high level with your job, then you're probably safe, which it should be.
Just odd to me that I get in a New York cab and there's former Jaguar punter Steve Weatherford. There he is, all yoked up and pontificating on the stoop. There he goes. It's a great world we live in, Johnny O. Where you get to, first of all, make 2 point whatever million for kicking a ball less than 100 times a year. Pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
God bless America, baby.
It's good work if you can get it.
You got it. All right. It is a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday, and good work if we can get it. And we are the only reason Johnny O got out of bed this morning, to be quite frank with you. But
I take my son to the airport.
Other than that, the only reason you're not back in bed this hour.
Yes, that's safe to say.
All right. We've got to look at the 2015 ESPY nominees as it pertains to the National Football League. We'll go through some of those and give you our thoughts on who is deserving of the most frivolous midsummer awards given out in sports. So we'll do that next, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. A Wild West Guns of Gold Monday continues on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, Jaguars Today continues here on Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. I want to tell you about another one of our sponsors. Don't forget about our friends at Claude Nolan Cadillac. Hard to forget about them. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. Why? Well, a number of reasons, but some of them are the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville, and there's absolutely no dealer fees. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint repair any Cadillac model. I'm telling you, you want customer service, you're not going to find it anywhere better than you will at Claude Nolan Cadillac. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one small step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com, or better yet, visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call Claude Nolan Cadillac at 642-5111. That's 642-5111. And make sure you say Mike Dempsey's told you to stop by. They're going to take phenomenal care of you at Claude Nolan Cadillac, one of our great sponsors here on Jaguars Today. Let's get a phone call or two in, and then we'll take a look at some of these SB nomination categories. And just glancing at the play of the year, it just goes to show me the overwhelming power and just the of the NFL and how it's everywhere. And compared to some of these other plays that are nominated as the best in the calendar year in sports, and I don't even know how half the people are, never mind visualize in my mind's eye what exactly they're talking about that they're supposed to have done that accomplished them being mentioned as one of the top performers of the year. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Let's get Ron up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ron. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you guys? How are you guys doing?
Good. Man? Good. What's up?
That's great. I just want to comment on the question of the day and tell Jaguars Nation, Duval County, why we should be hopefully optimistic for a little bit more optimistic than Jed Fisher's offense. For one, the short passing game, that West Coast style offense, that's pretty much what they ran over there in Oakland. And with our receivers opposed to their receivers, James Jones being their number one receiver, Allen Robinson being ours, I kind of see that as a win for Jacksonville. Number two, our offensive line. Our offensive line should be improved this year, and it should be greatly improved this year, just with the competition alone, and the growth and development of those younger players. Number three being Blake Bortles and his development. If Blake Bortles was good enough to go number three overall in the draft, that means he's a pretty good quarterback. Derek Carr, of course, went in the second round. I think he's a great quarterback and he's going to do great things in his league. But if his mechanics improve that much over the summer to where he was just on par with where Derek Carr was last year, this offense should be just that much better, or at least as feasible as it was in Oakland. I think that those points alone should make Jaguar fans that much more optimistic about this season and the change of offenses. Jed, the plays that you actually remember from Jed's offense were the plays that were gimmicky plays. I know John didn't want to say it, but I'll say it myself. They were the gimmick plays that you actually remember from that offense. It wasn't the actual what they did between the one 20-yard line and the other 20-yard line. Once it got to that dead zone, they pretty much were out of water. What do you guys think about that?
All right, Ron, thank you. A comment on all that. A, I totally agree on the offensive line. We mentioned that earlier. If the offensive line improves, it doesn't matter what system you have in place, you should have better results overall. Your first point, I don't care about if Allen Robinson's better than James Jones. Oakland shouldn't be your example, and that when you talk about the Jags should be as good as Oakland, they're the only team that was worse than Jacksonville last year statistically. If the goal is for this year's offense to be as good as Oakland's was last year, you're way undershooting. Okay, it should be significantly better than that. It was better than it last year. It was the only one in the league. And when you talk about Blake's development, John, I think that's part of it, though. How much does having a new system in place impact the development of Blake Bortles? We can't know that right now, but it is one of the factors that weighs into this.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is we can't know right now. We've seen him in OTAs. We've seen him in minicamp. All reports from Olsen, from Blake, from Gus, was that the mistakes overall offensively were minimal. Blake certainly had some errors. There were some interceptions. There were some touchdowns. There was all the stuff that you expect when a quarterback in a young offense are going through something on field for the first time. So it's impossible to tell how it will develop. What you expect and the expectation is behind a better offensive line with a wide receiver core that looks improved and with Julius Thomas and Allen Robinson both showing enough in the offseason that you think, okay, there's something Blake can rely on. You know, they really expect the running game with TJ Yeldon and the depth around that to be significantly better, and that should help a young quarterback in an area where really, except for two or three games, didn't get a lot of help last year. So, yeah, overall, you expect it to be improved, but we won't know until September and really even beyond that.
Tony, do me a favor, if you would. Look at what the Jags scored last year per game against the league, okay, and rank the teams by average offensive output, and then tell me what one more touchdown per game would put them at. You know, in other words, they scored, I believe, was something like 11 point something points per game. So put them at 18 point whatever per game, and where would that have fallen in the rankings? And we'll take a look at that here in a second. Let me throw a few of these SB categories out there that involve NFL players. Tell me who you would vote for if you know all the candidates, and who do you think will win here, John? We'll start with best breakthrough athlete, right? The NFL guy is Odell Beckham Jr. Certainly 12 games last year turned into what some feels is one of the top handful of receivers in the National Football League already. So you got him. You got Monae Davis, the Little League baseball star. You have Cardale Jones, who came on, played a few games, and led Ohio State to the national championship. And then you've got Jordan Spieth, winner of the last two majors. Who would you vote for, and who do you think will actually win?
When does the voting close?
I would think the voting continues on right up for probably about another week or so.
Then I would guess Spieth would win.
You think Spieth will win? I think Monae Davis will win this category, and it will be a walk. And I don't even know, you know, this is one where I wouldn't trust ESPN. I would need one of these Price Waterhouse Fisher people to show me the tally. I don't believe for a second that ESPN is not going to name Monae Davis the breakthrough athlete.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, they love that story.
Yeah.
They still have her on SportsCenter from time to time.
She was on, you know, that's the only place you really get Little League coverage. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, probably.
I would agree with you. I would vote for Spieth. You win two majors at the age that he's done it. First guy in like 80, 90 years to have two majors at this young of an age.
From a sports fan's point of view, kind of the hardcore old school sports fan guy that I am, I tend to diminish Little League baseball a little bit, probably more than I should, just because it wasn't the deal that it is now when I was growing up. But
I'm surprised they didn't have American Pharoah on here, honestly, knowing ESPN. Because I would disparage Little League baseball and horses when I'm comparing them to professional athletes.
Yeah. So, yeah, she'll probably win it.
I would think she'll win. Who would you vote for?
What were the nominees? I was looking up that Jaguar stat.
Best breakthrough athlete, Odell Beckham Jr., Monae Davis, Cardale Jones, or Jordan Spieth?
Honestly, I'd have Monae Davis third on that list. I'd probably go Spieth, Beckham, and then Davis.
Who do you think wins? I think Monae Davis wins.
I think Monae Davis probably wins.
Yeah, I do too. Where'd you come up with the numbers?
Thank Here's what we got. That. They were last in the league last year in points per game at 15.6.
But the reason we say they're second to Oakland, I think it was offensive yardage per game on average.
That was
right?
An offensive ranking. Oakland scored 15.8 points a game.
Okay, so they were at what last year?
15.6. So 22.6, if you give them another touchdown a game, would put them at 16th in the league.
Dead middle of the league. Can you get one more touchdown a game out of an improved offensive line, the addition of Julius Thomas, the development of a slew of second-year players? That, to me, should be...
What would be five, Tony?
Five more points per game?
5 more points per game would put him at 20.6. That would put him at 20th.
Something like
Still in that range, right? 5 to 7 more points.
An entire touchdown a game is...
It's a big jump.
It's a big jump. 4 or 5 points, get up to 20. You know.
But we say it's such a big jump. It's such a low standard that we're setting. And I know they've set the bar because that's what they produced last year. But if they could get you know, 5, 6, 7 more points per game, close to a full touchdown, put them right there in the middle of the pack, what would that be worth to the Jags from going 32nd in points scored to, let's say, somewhere in the high teens. What would that be worth in wins, in your estimation?
What that gets you is it gets you, I always use the Miami game last year, where they played really, really well and couldn't score. Well, all of a sudden you get a touchdown in the first half of that game, and I forget what the circumstances were, but you would have been up, you would have, you know, you would have had things going, you're still in it at the end. It's probably worth, you know, four wins. I mean, that's
right,
a huge
that's
jump.
That's three or four wins, right? And then you're talking six or seven wins just based on that, and if you hope the defense makes a modicum of improvement. I don't think it'll be as drastic because they were better on that side of the ball to begin with.
What the extra touchdown would really give you, and again, we're talking theoretically here, of course, what the extra touchdown gives you is so many games in the first couple years with this regime have been where at halftime they're down, you know, 14-3 or 17-6 or something like that, and if halftime of that game is 17-13 or 14-10, then you're in it. Something good happens early, then you're in it. Then it's all the way to the end, you're in it. It's that feeling coming out of halftime so often this team has had where you didn't know how they were going to get points.
Right. And there's so many times we're sitting here watching the games last year, Tony, and the Jags are down, like you say, down a score.
Which isn't unreasonable.
And you sit there and you say, right, it's a third quarter. If they go down another score, this game's pretty much over
right
with.
And that's the feeling in the NFL that NFL teams can't have.
Right.
Because it's a surge, comeback, momentum-type league where these days you're supposed to be able to overcome. 14-3 is not supposed to be – when I was a kid growing up, 14-3 was enormous in the NFL. In this day and age, it's not supposed to be. They've got to get back to where they can put points on the board and not have a deficit be a killer.
641-1010, the number. Let's go to Roy next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Roy. How are you?
Fine. How you doing? Thank you for taking
good
my call.
Sure.
I guess I'm kind of old school, but I think the stats, schemes, assistant coaches, and all of that, those are just smoke screens. What I'm looking for is the mentality of the whole team. For the last few years, the Jaguars have played soft, in my opinion. And when all of the smoke clears, it all points back to Gus. You've got to prepare your team mentally and physically. Teach them the fundamentals. Look at our coach, Belichick, and coach, Pete Carroll. You know, they have hard-hitting, fundamentally sound teams that loves the contact. And until you get a team that views a football game in that capacity, it doesn't matter what scheme. Those guys can run any scheme. You know, Seattle can run any scheme. New England can run any scheme. It's because of the thought process that they go through. Thank you.
All right, Roy. I don't know if I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I don't think that there are guys on this football team that, you know, defensive players, for instance, that don't love contact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that seems like what are you saying? You're saying that you get a bunch of guys who are inherently soft and they want to play, I don't know, what is finesse football, by the way? I really don't know defensively how you can play finesse football all that much. But, you know, I don't know if I buy that. I think when
you're not playing football very well,
you get those kind of criticisms,
which at times,
right,
this team hasn't, then you're called soft.
Right. Or when a team physically imposes their will on you, doesn't mean you don't have the desire or lack the fundamentals. Sometimes you don't have the personnel. I may have, you could pluck a guy with all the desire who loves to play physical and has great fundamentals, and he just doesn't have the athleticism to run and catch these guys. It's not going to matter.
If a team can't, also, if a team can't run, which this team has had trouble running the ball, that's usually perceived as being soft. Because, you know, there's that.
Right. They can't run the ball and go out there and impose your will on the other team. How come you're not doing that?
I'm not saying that the call is necessarily wrong or off base on the Jags. I just don't know that I would consider this a soft team. I think the defense last year, for the most part, the line was pretty imposed its will on a lot of games. Like, and I'll pick out one. The Giants game was one of the strangest games I've ever seen in terms of one unit imposing its will.
Yeah.
Because you're down and your defensive line gets you back in the game, which is very rare. They did it in Indy as well when the offense really couldn't you know, kind of maintain with what they were doing. For the most part, this defense played with an awful lot of heart and desire for the most part last year. And when it got let down, it was a lack of depth and, you know, lack of talent in some spots.
Well, the defense was good enough that a touchdown a game would have made a big difference in a lot of games last year for this football team. And I think, and I understand the frustration of the caller and a lot of the fan base out there, it was that the offense not only couldn't get out of its own way at times, but had no identity. You didn't know what they wanted to do going into a football game. There was this, you know, speech given to, hey, we want to be able to run the ball this week. Well, what does that mean? How are you going to be able to run the ball? And it was, you didn't feel like anything going into a game, this is what we're going to do to dictate. And you feel like maybe this year, because you have a bunch of guys going into a second year, you at least hope that this year there is an identity on that side of the football.
And just better guys too, Tony. I mean, Jeremy Parnell, if he is what they expect him to be, it's just going to be a better alternative than anybody that they put out at right tackle last year. He's more physical. He's a better athlete. He's quicker. He's better in every sense of the word. So when you go out there and you try to run the football now, you're going to be more effective. You're not going to have any more desire, in my opinion, to impose your will on anybody else. You're just going to have the ability to do it. You're going to have the ammo to go out there and try to do that and be successful doing it. We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, asking you today, with a change in offensive philosophy and with a new offensive coordinator coming in, does that increase your hope on that side of the football, or does it dampen your enthusiasm a little bit? We'll get to that. And also, if I can squeeze in a few of these SB categories, if we have time to do it, we will as well. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we'll get a look at this fan feedback spotlight here momentarily. It's at Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold, they'll meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. That is guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns, as John well knows, at Wild West. Visit Guns for Jax Guns, the number 4, JAX.com, online, or stop by at 1233 South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight. Let me just give you the nominees for the best play. This is the one category we'll have time to take a look at here. Best play in the sporting calendar. And just tell me if you know who these people are. All right. Granted, I've become a lot more football centric and I don't watch SportsCenter as deep. Tony and I were just talking about this morning. If you're a baseball fan, should you know X? I don't consider myself a baseball fan anymore. I'm a fan of my team. When their highlights are done on SportsCenter, if they're in a baseball block, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see what the Cubs are doing or the Cardinals are doing, whatever. That's just
I know how A-Rod,
by the way, I told Tony, A-Rod is nominated for Comeback Player of the Year. Right now, he's having a hell of a half season. He's had a really good half season, right? Hitting for power, hitting in the 280s. There is no way A-Rod's winning an ESPY. There's no way in hell. I don't care what the voting says. And I can't imagine many people voting for A-Rod
anyway.
But if A-Rod actually won,
passing Willie Mays,
that'd be like all A-Rod's votes are going to Monet Davis, man. Are you kidding me? Stop it. He is doing all these things milestone-wise.
He's a good guy.
Odell Beckham Jr., we know who he is and the catch he made. That leaps right to mind, no pun intended, right? That's the number one seed in best play. Blaze Reardon's coast-to-coast goal.
It's lacrosse. I watched a bunch
Moving
of these
plays on.
A few moments ago. It was a lacrosse goal.
So you watched him.
I didn't watch the play.
Prior to 10 minutes ago?
No idea who Blaze was.
Blaze Reardon. There you go. Yeah. Kevin Pillar's grab. You told me that was Toronto center fielder.
It's a pretty impressive
versus
grab.
Jeremy Menez's goal.
It's probably hockey, I think.
Is it?
I think.
You think. You're not sure, though, right?
I'm really not sure.
It could be soccer.
You may be right. I don't think it's soccer.
The only soccer goal I saw in there was Messi.
Okay. Malcolm Butler's interception, we remember, it saved the Super Bowl, versus Josh Sheehan's triple backflip.
Oh, that's the motorcycle guy. He did the world's first triple backflip for Nitro Circus. He was actually here in town.
Yeah, Jackson did that at halftime against the Rams.
Didn't a monster truck do a double backflip, or at least they claimed to try to do one?
They tried to do one.
They did, and it landed on its wheels, but it did like a little 180 twist in there.
I remember just a handful of years ago, it felt like doing a backflip was like the biggest deal on a bike.
Right.
And now the dude's doing
triple,
three.
Triple.
It really, I did watch that one. I was like, whoa.
All right. Steph Curry's three-pointer. I don't know which three-pointer.
Step back.
I haven't watched them
I'm
all.
Guessing it's that step back.
From the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, we know who Steph Curry is versus Amir Abdullah's touchdown. I don't remember the run for Nebraska. I know who Amir Abdullah is because
I watched it.
Football.
It was against McNeese State. Nebraska needed a late touchdown, so he ran through four of those McNeese Staters.
All right. What about the Bahama Bowl Hail Mary?
Yeah, that was
That was at the Bahama Bowl.
Central Michigan and
they threw
somebody.
That pass.
Yeah. It was Central Michigan and somebody. It was this ferocious comeback late in the game, and then the Hail Mary wound up sealing the deal for
him. Versus Dwayne Bravo's save. Is that a real name of a person? Dwayne Bravo?
Johnny Bravo? Or is it what they said after the save?
That might be the cricket. I don't know.
Bravo, Dwayne. Very
nice. I don't know. That might be the cricket.
Okay. Tyler Ennis's backhand.
We don't have any
Tyler
idea.
Tyler Ennis is a basketball player, right? What does his backhand have to do with anything?
Maybe he doubles as a tennis player. Maybe
apparently he's a Buffalo Sabres forward, so hockey guy.
You told me it was a goal? Syracuse basketball player.
The lesser known Tyler Ennis, the Sabres forward.
The other Tyler Ennis. Okay.
See, nobody knows.
Right. That one's going up
against Shawnee Schimmel's shot.
Oh, you don't just
the very alliterative Shawnee Schimmel shot.
I have no idea.
Say that five times.
Lionel Messi's goal.
That was a thing of freaking beauty.
Stop it.
He dribbled through three guys and he crossed over a guy. He took on four defenders.
I'm voting for Jerry and Grant's dunk
it
six
really
times
was,
right now.
I mean, it was an incredible goal by Messi in the Copa del Rey.
But in this day and age, are any of those plays as much as Beckham's catch was shown. Maybe I'm just too football centric. I can't imagine anything beating that.
I can't either right now. And then the final one was Ronda Rousey's armbar versus Gerald Green's dunk.
Well,
Ronda Rousey's great at what she does.
I didn't take Ronda Rousey's armbar.
Well, you didn't, so. Right? Ronda Rousey's another ESPN darling, yeah. Right? You tell me her armbar against somebody who she armbars everyone into submission, right? In every fight, isn't that pretty much
She won that fight in like 10 seconds.
Okay.
On a Wild West Monday,
yes?
Never discount the armbar.
Stop it. I'll go with firearms against the armbar, right? Firearm bar is what I'm looking for, John. That is another nod to political correctness in one of their favorite daughters in this case, not favorite sons. In Bristol, Connecticut. So vote for whomever you like, if you like. They mean nothing anyway. The question of the day, which means an incredible amount.
Well,
it really
we
does.
Well, we reach a day, though, and not to delay. Will we reach a day when
as
the ESPYs do matter?
No.
No, I mean,
no.
To us it doesn't matter because they weren't there when we were kids and we sort of know. But does the younger generation think that these are important? Oh, my goodness.
I don't think so. Okay. I think my guess, well, and I don't know. How do I know what the younger generation thinks, right?
I'm kind of.
I can only tell you how.
The fact that you use the word hip makes me think you have no idea what that really means anymore. Because, you know, the only people who use the word hip are like you and Frangie and older guys who think that's still a word that has any value to a younger generation. No, you're not.
Look, I can tell you this about it, John. I'm 32 next month. I've never sat down and watched an ESPYs.
Yeah, but also you're
never in my life.
You're not hip either.
Never would. And I don't have any friends of mine that I've heard say they've watched the ESPYs. I find something else to do. I have alternatives. Even on that night with nothing going on in sports, I will find something else
But
to
I
do.
Think that's why they include things like a guy on a motorcycle doing a triple back.
Sure.
To try to go after that extreme sports segment. Which,
I watched them all
the way,
on their website
they
today.
They televise as well. You know? I mean, look, it's not the end of the world. It's not, you know, there's nothing of real importance being given away here. It's just an honor. We're going back. All right. Well, I was going back and watching, I watched a couple of 30 for 30s this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what it was.
Oh, you are
hip. Watching. I know, right? No, 30 for 30s are good. Come on now. But they're talking about the ESPYs used to be basically, if you agreed to show up, you would get the award. Because they wanted guys walking out on stage or ladies walking out on stage and accepting the awards. And it was like, well, you're kind of the fourth choice, but you're the top guy who's going to be here. So you'll win an ESPY. Will you please show up to this thing?
Well, and then Spieth won't win this year if that rule's still in effect because he'll be getting ready to play at St. Andrews.
It's gotten better, but Spieth should win. But regardless, who cares? It's the ESPYs. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, asking people, has their expectations increased or diminished due to the fact that the Jags will be facing a new offense in Blake Bortles' second year to try to master, what kind of feedback we get?
Here's what we got from Christoph. For me, it's the players that need to execute Jimmy's and Joe's before X's and O's. From Irish Jaguar, players not plays, expectations unchanged. From Isaiah, it lessens expectations and makes the excuse it's a new system. From Enfuego Sports Network, all rides on Bortles and his ability to learn a system, expectations are up because they were so low. From Black Dog, with the learning curve of a new system, it dictates reservations. Ultimately, I foresee precision air strikes, hashtag B2. From Eric, as long as the run game is going well, I'm okay with the change and consider it a positive move. From Bobby, increase with a commitment to the run and better offensive line, we should be more functional on offense. From Clay Station, increase for sure. The new offense comes second to the new players and second-year development of players. And from Demetrius, not at all. The offense will improve under Olsen. Marone improving the O-line will be paramount to play calling, though.
All right, give you a quick sampling off the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Debbie says it really doesn't matter to her in any way. There have been so many changes over the years. She has to see it to believe it regardless of the changes. Alan said it can't get much worse, so increase. Armand said Jags are getting 6 to 8 wins, and the system should help if it plays to the player's strengths. Josh said most of these guys should be able to learn the new plays and system quicker going into their second plus year. There'll be a little bit of a learning curve, but they should see improvement, hopefully. And then these two to contrast each other. Damon says, I increased my expectations. 10-6 or 11-5 with this offense. Just watch. Followed by Dustin, who says, Bill Walsh could be calling the plays, and it still won't get them more than 5 wins.
That's one of your guys.
So, yes, I think that he was more along the guys we were talking about at the very top of the show. In general, increase or decrease? Increase your expectations when now, you know, all things considered, this offense under Greg Olsen, better than it was last year.
Yeah, I think it'll be better because of the players, and I think it'll be better because I believe that it's what Gus wants, and there'll be continuity between their offensive line concept and their offense. I think everybody's going to be in lockstep at some point relatively quickly.
Tony, a better or worse or the same?
I expect better. And look, again, I don't know that you can go be a whole lot worse than they were last year. But you are talking about a bunch of guys going into their second year. But we've said that before. They can't be worse than last year. And then they won 2 games. I mean, we've had that conversation before, but I think it's, when you listen to the players talk about what they're learning in this offense, it sounds like they're all very comfortable with what they're being asked to do, at least to this point. And again, we'll see what it really looks like once we get into training camp and into preseason football here at the end of July.
Yeah, I think just more, I don't think it's directly Greg Olsen coming in that's going to revolutionize this offense. I think for a lot of the reasons that we talked about, the offensive line being paramount, but you hope that Blake Bortles, who I will continue to describe as a guy who, whatever his potential is, he'll realize it. It won't be for lack of working. We just don't know what that true potential really is yet with him. And
that's a significant thing you just said, which not every quarterback is that.
That's the thing that I feel best about Blake Bortles right now, is that whatever it is, whatever he has to get out of himself, he'll be able to get it out because he will exhaust every means possible to do that. Will that be enough to be a good enough quarterback to lead this team to a championship level? Time will tell on that one. But when you add in, some veterans, even though Parnell has not played a ton, it should be an upgrade, should be ready to step right in from day one, possibly Wisniewski as well at center. And then you add in, obviously, Julius Thomas, the impact we expect him to make.